I was thinking a little bit about Lag BaOmer, so people forget that Eliyahu HaNavi has a starring role. Maybe we'll talk about this a little bit, actually, at the outset. Eliyahu HaNavi, does anybody remember the role that Eliyahu HaNavi plays in the Lag BaOmer story? So it's sort of a shot in the dark. I have to be honest, I don't think I would have remembered this if I wasn't like looking over this Gemara very recently. You know, at that part of the story, after 12 years, when Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai and his son Rabbi Lazar, according to these Kabbalistic traditions, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai emerged from the cave, I guess the second time on Lag BaOmer, or maybe both times, I guess would be the idea. In any event, the Gemara says, Gemara in Shabbos, and Lam Gimel says that it was Eliyahu HaNavi who came to tell him that he could come out of the cave. I was actually reflecting a little bit on that today. It never really attracted my attention, but I actually think it fits in very nicely with some of the themes that we were discussing. Remember, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai and Rabbi Lazar Rabbi Shimon get into the cave because they've said, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai said some very pejorative things about the Romans and even their very impressive technological and public health and even economic attainments. He saw in a very self-interested kind of a way. He ended up having to hide out in this cave, but there's this undercurrent in the story of how Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai and the son, Rabbi Lazar, sort of see themselves as, to quote from Eliyahu, Ani notarti l'Hashem levadi, right? This sense of us against the world. Even there's one line where when they come out of the cave, where Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai is trying to mollify his son, who's still like vaporizing, immolating everything that he sees. And he says, you know, Dai la'olam be'ani va'ata, the two of us are good enough for the world. So there's kind of this very interesting motif there, again, that we had been touching on, of Eliyahu, as opposed to Ovadia, who's very, very integrated, and, you know, doing everything that he can to really influence society, right? The idea of Rabbi Shimon Yochai and Rabbi Lazar as not really, you know, until the end of the story, when they finally come around, and Rabbi Shimon Yochai wants to follow in the footsteps of Yaakov Avinu, Vayichan es Pnei Ha'ir, and make a contribution, you know, to the world around him. So that's like a developmental process for Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. It's what I think is actually really at the heart of the Lag BaOmer message, is that, you know, Torah should lead one to have Al Tikri Banayach Ela Bonayach, a constructive perspective on the world, as opposed to, you know, the Chariv Olami Yitzasem. So in any event, I think that actually dovetails seamlessly with some of the themes we've been discussing about Eliyahu as, and this is part of what Herb wrote to me this week, that there's a certain purity to Eliyahu, a certain kind of, straightforward, maybe to a fault, but, you know, an absolute purity, that he wasn't going to be, you know, willing to compromise, anywhere and anything. That's the last point that we were discussing last week, until he makes this massive horasha, right, this violation of the Torah. And I thought that's a really interesting point, because in his pursuit of purity, right, Eliyahu HaNavi ends up, and according to, this is where we'll begin, you know, most, Mefarshim, most Rishonim, it's really his idea. God doesn't put him up to this, but this idea that we have to, you know, violate the Torah to save the Torah, that's sort of like the very definition of a compromise, right? The Rambam, noted last week, compares it to an amputation. Nobody wants to undergo an amputation, but if the choice is, you know, amputate this limb or the organism itself is going to die, you know, so then you make that choice, not out of anything but necessity. So the fact that Eliyahu HaNavi has to compromise in this way, I think is a very fascinating comment about the outer boundaries, let's say, of purity. It's just not possible in this world anyway to maintain a complete purity. And engaging with people does require, hopefully not compromising, you know, values, but being somewhat flexible. And here, even, you know, at least temporarily compromising, you know, one of the mitzvot HaTorah, which isn't something that just about everybody could do, but it's something that Eliyahu HaNavi, in his way, you know, came to. And that's what the Abravanel writes here. So with your permission, I wanted to begin with the Abravanel. We'll see that the fire is going to come. right? That Eliyahu did this of his own accord. Okay? And it's different, the Abravanel goes on to say, from everything that's happened up until this point. God told him to go to the River Jordan, and God told him to go to Tzidon, to the house of the Tzarfatit. And Eliyahu was moved to do this of his own accord. It was a real deviation for him. So the end here, Lachin Chashash Eliyahu, Lailo Yimali Hashem Yizbarach Biyadu, Lazahivtir Bitulas Lashem Yizbarach Shiyaneyu. And Eliyahu, for the first time in his life, like really felt out on a limb, right? That here he was doing something that you couldn't say was an obvious move or directly listening to the will of God. Another very fascinating point in terms of what made this very pressured moment. The Gemara in Shabbos says, "Me masai tambas chosavos." When did this chosavos expire? There was nothing left. So Rabbi Shua ben Levi says, "In the days of Eliyahu, our story, our chapter tonight." Shenemra vayhi ba'alos hamincha vaygash Eliyahu navi vayomer Hashem Elokei Avraham Yitzchak v'Yisrael hayom yivadak yatalohim b'Yisrael vani avdecha v'dvarcha asisi es kol advarim ha'elu. That is to say, like zechus avos, the merit that we all have on account of the great deeds of the founders of our faith, you know, had just about expired. That the Jewish people were on their last legs. And part of that, I think, is a justification. This tradition in Shabbos is a justification for the, you know, radical steps that Eliyahu took. If you really think that you're at the end of the road in terms of zechus avos, right, maybe it's time to, you know, pull out the trick play, so to speak, the flea flicker, you know, that's the time where, you know, conventional means are no longer going to be sufficient. So to pick it up exactly where we left off, remember you have all of the Nivei Habal and you have Eliyahu, and the rains are supposed to come, but they're not going to come until, you know, as Eliyahu says, Ad Mataya Tempo Schim al Shtei Asiipim, Im Hashem Hu Alokim, Im Habal Hu Alohim. Right, so you have to choose, and each one takes a par. Eliyahu very, very graciously gives them the first draft picked. Right, so they don't, Eliyahu allows them to pick, and they get to, you know, they get they receive as well. They elect to receive, so they get to go first in this contest. Okay, so Vayom Eliyahu Nivei Habal Bachru Lachem Apar Echad Vasuri Shona. So Eliyahu, there's always, you know, so much underneath the surface. He says, look, you guys, by all rights, should get to pick first, you know, which cow you want, because after all, ki atem harabim. You are the many. Right? This is classic Eliyahu, right? It's true, right? You know, there's like a, you know, kavod harabim, but Eliyahu also means that in the exactly what he said, and you know, tarti l'Hashem levadi, the sense of, you know, him against the world. Okay, there's a medrash which says asher nasan lahem, that even though they're supposed to take it, the cow didn't want to go. Vayasu vayikru b'shem habal me'aboker v'adat sarayim le'mor habal anenu ve'ein kol ve'ein ona vayifaschu al mizbeach asher asa. So they call from morning until the end of the afternoon, speak, and you know, they're asking for the Baal to answer them. Tzarayim is important because the Baal is associated with worship of the sun. So when the sun sets, it's going to be, you know, game, set, match, and there's nothing. And vayifaschu, in the language of atempo schim al shtei asiipim. So either they were, this is part of their avodah zarah, according to, you know, other perspectives. This related to the idea of them, you know, destroying the mizbeach that Eliyahu actually had built, and we'll see it a little bit later. Vayiva tzarayim, this is pretty biting words from Eliyahu. Vayatel b'hem Eliyahu. So Eliyahu started mocking them. Again, it's a certain personality. Vayomer kiru v'kol gadol ki Elohim hu, ki siach v'chisiglo v'chiderech lo l'ayashin hu v'yikatz. So Eliyahu says, you know, guys, I think what the problem is you're just not being loud enough. You know, I know he's God, but, you know, there's some hearing loss. You know, he may be tired, may be tied up with other issues. If you could just scream a little bit louder, you know, maybe you'll get his attention this time. So this is, you know, obviously an indication. Vayikru b'kol gadol, and they have nothing to do but, you know, sort of give into this. Vayisgodidu kimishbatam, and they start mutilating themselves. Bacharavos uvarimachem ad shvo chadam aleihem. This was darchei ha'emori, in the literal sense of the term, the self-mutilation. with swords and with spears and the like, until they were literally covered and flowing in blood. And as the afternoon was passing, and of course, there's nothing doing. Vayomer Eliyahu l'chol ha'am, gishu elai, vayikshu. And this is a watershed moment. Vayikshu chol ha'am ilav, vayirapeyas mizbach Adonai heharos. So Eliyahu says, come close. Come to me. This is such an important moment. It's the first time that Eliyahu has ever done anything like this, calling the people close to him. You know, up until now, in so many ways, Eliyahu has been observing that the people aren't on his side. But the question that we've been asking is, well, have you tried calling them over to your side? Isn't that sort of the job? Finally, Gishu no Eli, he calls them over. And the entire people come over. They're open to it. And at that point, Eliyahu, who up until now has been all about, you know, destruction, he starts healing. It doesn't say, Vayiven es Mizbeach Hashem Heharos, that he rebuilt the Mizbeach of Hashem that had been destroyed by Irape. He brought healing, Ripui. Now, what's this Mizbeach, the different theories? One of them is that, as I mentioned before, that the Nevi'ei HaBaal had destroyed the Mizbeach. One of them is that it was a Mizbeach that had once been there, and it was destroyed, you know, over the years. So, Vayikach Eliyahu Shtei Misrei Avanim Kemispar Shiftei Bnei Yaakov, takes 12 stones, Asher Hayad Dvar Adonai Lav Lemor Yisrael Yashemecha. It's a very, very important symbolism. 12 stones, Keneged the Shifteka. He digs a little irrigation moat around the Mizbeach. Cuts up the par and he puts it on the wood. And he tells them to take 4 pitchers of water. They did it 3 times. And again, water is very precious right now. There's a terrible drought, and he's expending water, so God better deliver the rains, right? And not only that, but he's making it harder for the fire to consume. So the water now filled up all the irrigation ditch around. Hayom yivado ki atelohim biYisrael vaani avdecha udvarcha sisi es kol advarim hoile. So it's not only a vindication of God, but you can see here vaani avdecha veyaminu b'Hashem uvemoshe avdo. It's a vindication of Eliyahu. Aneini Adonai aneini v'yedu amazek ki ata Adonai Elohim v'ata sibosa es libam achoranis. Aneini Adonai aneini. There's 2 remarkable drashos. One of them is in the Targum Yonasan. Targum Yonasan says, Aneni ba'esh, aneni ba'mayim. Bring down the fire that will consume the par, and then bring the rains. The Yerushalmi says, Aneni bischusi, aneni bischus talmidi. Already foreshadowing that Eliyahu knew that maybe this was going to be his one moment, and then he would give way to Elisha. See that Elisha is different than Eliyahu, his relationship with the people. V'yedu ha'amazan, they should know, ki ata Hashem Elokim v'ata hasibosas libam achoranis. Literally means that, God, you caused their hearts to turn. It's an amazing Gemara I just wanted to show you. With Gemara in Brachos and Lamed Aleph, Amar Rabbi Lazar Eliyahu hitiach dvarim klape mala, that Eliyahu spoke audacious words. Shenemar v'ata siboses libam achoranis. Amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Rabbi Yitzchak minayin shechazar kadosh baruch hu v'hodel al Eliyahu d'chsev asher hariosi. That Eliyahu sort of like pivoted dramatically 180 degrees. that he said, "You, God, caused their hearts to turn. This is your fault, everything that happened. You turned them away from you." It's dramatic. I can't say enough about it, right? Eliyahu had gone, been, you know, from the avenger of God against the people, now, you know, is willing to vindicate the people, so to speak, at the expense of God. This is a breakthrough moment for him, right? Geshu Eli. There's a moment here where he's really reaching out. Vatipolesha Adonai Vatochal Esaula Vesaitzim Vesavanim Vesafar Vesamayim Asher Bate Allah Likechan. At that exact moment, ironically, right, according to Chazal, exactly at the moment when he insulted God, quote unquote, said, "It's your fault because you allowed the people to go astray," at that moment God answers him in fire and vindicates his prophecy. As if to say, Eliyahu, I was waiting for this the whole time. I was waiting for you to say it was my fault to defend the people. I had had enough of you saying, what's wrong with these people? Vayar kolam vayiplu al pneihem vayomru Adonai hu Elohim, Adonai hu Elohim. This is like Eliyahu's dream. It's Ne'ila, Yom Kippur, right? Hashem hu Elokim, Hashem hu Elokim, Hashem hu Elokim. Such clarity. But to do it, Eliyahu had to really break out of his entire mode. Vayom Eliyahu lahem tifsu es nevi'ei ha'bal ishal yimaleit mehem. So Eliyahu, again, seemingly on his own. Nobody put him up to this. Vayit pesum vayirudim Eliyahu el nachal kishon vayishchateim sham. So Eliyahu has them grab the Nevi'ei HaBaal, right? 450 people. And he personally slaughters all of them there. And again, there's a very broad consensus that he did this on his own. The precedents that various Meforshim, the Bravanel, the Malbim, the Radak, they appeal to is, you know, Pinchas and Zimri, Kanayim Poginbo, Shmuel and Agag, right? If before, with respect to Nivei HaBaal, in Kol, Vein Onev, Vein Kashev, now there's going to be thunderous sounds. So Eliyahu goes to the very top of the mountain. He puts his head between his knees. Look over in the Mediterranean, in Har HaKarmel. Vayal vayaved vayomer ein meuma, nothing. Vayomer shuv sheva pa'amim. And this went on 7 times back and forth, sending him out to look over the coastline. Vayhi bashvi'is vayomer hinei av kitanach chavish olem yam. And there was like a little cloud that looked like nothing more than the hand, the palm of a person. Tiny little cloud. Vayomer alei emor alacha v'sor v'reid lo yatercha agashem. So Achav, he better get home quickly if he doesn't want to get stuck in the rain. Before you knew it, that the clouds had literally, you know, been knotted across the skies. Viruach. Vahi geshem gadol vayirkav achav vayilach Yisraela. And of course, Achav rides his royal chariot back home. Vayad Adonai hoysel Eliyahu. And even though Achav is riding a fast horse, a royal horse, Eliyahu runs in front of him, kavod l'malchus. And the parak began with Eliyahu not even being willing to see Achav. And now he literally runs in front of him all the way, and just filled with the Spirit of God, v'koyi Hashem yachalifu choach, Yalu Aver Kanisharim Yarutsulo Yigo Yelchu Velo Yiafu. This is of course the pinnacle of Eliyahu's career, where Eliyahu apparently again comes to this point where he sees God as quote unquote Ata Hasibosas Libamachoranis Hitiach Dvarim Klape Mala. Spoke audaciously. And for that, God answers him. Ba'esh uvamayim. Aneni Hashem aneni. Ba'esh uvamayim. Paradoxes and contradictions, all the same. To return to where we started, Eliyahu, pure as any figure in Tanakh, decides of his own, on his own, by his own, to deviate. Shchutechutz, it's a serious aveira. It doesn't register for us as much because we don't have that anymore. But to offer a karban outside of the Beis HaMikdash, it's a shocking departure. It's like the earth leaving its orbit. It's the wrong thing to do. On the contrary, it was obviously the right thing to do. It brought the results. It brought the rain. Hashem hu alokim. But it requires some explanation. In particular, it requires specific explanation. Right? I would think that Eliyahu could have done almost innumerable things to do something very impressive. Didn't have to be a korban. He could have, you know, sort of lined up the Nevi'ei HaBaal, you know, on one side, and he could have been on the other side, and, you know, said, you know, if anybody can jump over this rock, you know, and have God carry him across the rock. You didn't have to violate, you didn't have to do Shchut Echutz, did you? And again, to return to that all-important detail, Shnei Masar Avanim Keneged, Shnei Masar B'nei Yaakov, what is the symbolism of that? And how does that connect to perhaps the most shocking moment of Eliyahu's life, when he turns to Hashem and says, "Ata hasibos esli b'machoranis, you allowed this to happen. You, God." So it needs to be understood. I'd like to suggest the following. It's been years and years and decades, generations even, since the northern tribes, that's Eliyahu's bailiwick, since the northern tribes really had a sense that God was amongst them. The Beis HaMikdash, the Korbanos are offered, is in the tribal area of Yehuda, and that is now, and has been, a foreign country for some time. They haven't at points been allowed to go there. And there is a legitimate question that these people have regarding their connection to God. You know, if you think about it, you know, not to be reductionist, but Achav is somewhere in between Malchus Yehuda and the kingdom to the north, right where Yezebel is from, where they worship the Baal. And that's not perhaps too great a surprise, because geographically that's true. He's in between Malchus Yehuda and the Levanon, where they worship the Baal. And that's the way most people in Malchut Yisrael understood themselves. Yeah, you know, we're just to the south of the Baal people, we're just to the north of the Hashem people. Al matay atem poschim al shtei ha'sa'ipim. And anyway, you know, this whole Hashem thing isn't working out so well for us. It's been 3 years since we had any rain. And Eliyahu says that, God, that you've distanced yourself from these people to the point where they don't really have a relationship. So what did Eliyahu do? He said, you know what? These people, if for one day, these people need to experience the idea that God is here amongst all of the tribes of Israel. Shnei Masar Arbanim Keneged Shnei Masar B'nei Yaakov the Shivteka. And yes, for a moment, for the sake of bringing the entire Jewish people back to the Beis HaMikdash, I'm going to have to take them away from the Beis HaMikdash. and show them Aneni Hashem, Aneni, Aneni Hashem Ba'esh, Aneni Hashem Ba'mayim, to show that the Divine Spirit can rest here. God chooses Makom Asher Yivchar Hashem Shekein Shmo Shemam. God chooses Har HaMoriah, but God also chooses the entire Jewish people, and they're a part of that. And he wants them to understand that they're a part of that in a very significant way. Eliyahu comes to the recognition that even if it's true that he recognized, that he felt the Divine Spirit, that the average person in Malchus Yisrael wasn't and didn't and wasn't going to unless something dramatic changed. And he was prepared to push all of the chips to the middle of the table, to take the ultimate risk to at least create that opportunity. Aneni Hashem Aneni. And in his own way, it was the moment perhaps of greatest empathy, greatest sympathy for the Jewish people and for their spiritual plight and for everything that they had endured. Ata hasibos es libam achoranis, hitiach dvarim klape mala. And this is what's going to take to bring God and the Jewish people back together. Now, of course, moving forward, Eliyahu, there's no doubt that he had great expectations. He's filled with strength and vigor. He runs in front of Achav. There's no doubt in my mind that he assumed that from this point on that Achav would do a full and complete tshuva, that this would be the turning point in his life. The clarity had been achieved, the variables isolated, the winner was clear. Of course, things aren't going to work out that way. Be tremendous disappointment. Tremendous disappointment. But all of that being said, in this moment, Eliyahu reaches the climax of his prophetic mission. It was to give the Jewish people, so far gone, so far removed, a sense that God still wanted a relationship with them. One last point. There's no question that Eliyahu has made a very, very significant impression. Achav on the people, the destruction of the Nevi'ei Habal. But perhaps somebody can, going back to last week, can note that there's somebody very, very, very critical who isn't represented here, who deliberately opted out, kept the inner circle. This person kept their inner circle away. And this is going to be perhaps the source of the undoing of the clarity of this moment. But who wasn't there at all? You have Achav, of course. You have the Nevi'ei Habal. You have the people representing all Shivteka, Shnei Masar Avanim, Kimispar, Bnei Yaakov. But who wasn't there? Remember Izevel. And Izevel's 400 Nevi'ei HaAsherah, Ochlei Shulchan Izevel. And the persona of Izevel is going to emerge as a critical one. She wanted no part of this. She wouldn't allow, to speak, her prophets to be involved. Very, very clear, clear indication. No matter how many hora'os sha'a Eliyahu can achieve, Izebel is hardened. And if Eliyahu thinks that it would be sufficient to win over Ahav, as apparently he did and he had in this moment on a one-time basis, I can assure you Izebel will have something to say about that. After all, it was Izebel, we know this from last time, when Ovadia hid the 100 Nevi'ei Hashem, Behachris Izebel as Nevi'ei Hashem. It was her initiative. Spiritually speaking, she's truly the nemesis. And none of this, for all of its importance, and all of the importance that Eliyahu no doubt attached to it, Izebel remains completely unimpacted by this. And that's going to create a problem for Eliyahu moving forward. It's obviously going to create a problem for the Jewish people moving forward. But in terms of Eliyahu moving all of his chips to the middle of the table and saying, we're going to swing for the fences, this is the Hora Shah, we're going to bring a carbon, it's going to be accepted, it's going to remind the Jewish people that God has a relationship with all of them and yet has chosen Yerushalayim to bring the Jewish people back together. And it seemed like the entire risk was justified of the Hora Shah, because Hashem Hu Elokim and Achav, and you get the king, and everything seems like it's aligned. But what if the person who represents the greatest threat to Eliyahu's vision remains as dangerous as she always was? And that's where we'll pick it up next week.
Ashen Lenin.
Agreed.
Did they make that without getting soaked?
You know, undoubtedly Eva was one of those things where they were dancing in the rain. Happy Lag Vomer, everybody.
Good night.